Running Wild with Christine, sex, success, and other slippery rabbit holes. Welcome to episode 44 with Andrea Lowen. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy. I found you through this Vancouver group, by the way, for any women who are listening.
Mm-hmm. Girl Gang.
Girl Gang that we love.
It is the best network group if you work in anything to do with media or anything. Whatever. It's just... I found so many awesome women through this group.
I know, it's so great. And then we found out recently also that we're both on the Uncomfortable podcast as well.
Yeah.
So go check out Debbie Roche's podcast. We love her.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And also she has a sweet, sweet accent. So just go listen. You are a writer and theater manager and choreographer from Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Technically Abbotsford. Right?
Yeah, that's where I grew up. When we traveled, we would say we were from Vancouver.
Good call.
Yeah.
I would too.
No one's heard of Abbotsford.
I have a lot since, like, a lot of filming happens in Abbotsford.
Oh, sure. So yeah, yeah. Like Riverdale and all
yes,
that stuff.
Yes, commute to the end of the world. You are most notably for this episode, however, just published your first book.
Yes, it's so exciting.
I know, I remember. How are you feeling?
It's kind of wild.
Terrifying.
Like, I help. Yeah. Pretty much. Like how you look in my eyes and you're like, oh, I see it.
I see the fear. That's exactly it. The book is called Feeling Better, A Field Guide to Liking Yourself.
Yeah.
And then your tagline is like, maybe even loving yourself.
Yeah.
Like, let's be cautiously optimistic.
Well, yeah, I think when you hate yourself, which I did, it's... The concept of loving yourself is, like, a little too much.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, let's just start with, like, maybe liking who I am.
Yeah, and maybe then... not hating every...
Yeah, yeah, okay. Like, even you could probably step it back and be, like, being okay with yourself.
I mean, I like that. I think that's, like, the key to happiness is just, like, setting, like, baseline expectations.
Totally, totally. Yeah, like expectations just right down there so that hopefully you're pleasantly surprised.
Exactly. I coined something called like expected disappointment in my book.
Because
I was starting to be like, yeah, this is just too high of an expectation.
Right.
Just like I'm expecting to be disappointed, which is totally contradictory if you look
right.
at the
yeah.
term. But anyway, so tell us a little bit about yourself. You grew up in Abbotsford.
Yeah, I grew up in Abbotsford, Mennonite family, which probably doesn't mean what most people think it means.
Okay.
Like, I didn't wear kerchiefs on my head or, like, any of that stuff.
So what did it mean for you?
Well, first of all, like, grew up going to church and all that kind of thing, and there's, like, Mennonite food and Mennonite, you know, so grew up sort of in the culture of Mennonite stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing, if anyone is like, oh, I want to know what Mennonite food is like.
Yeah.
Find a Mennonite and ask for a roll kukin.
Okay.
It's only eaten in the summertime. It's
okay.
just like deep fried dough that you dip
Ooh.
In syrup and you
Ooh.
Eat it with watermelon.
Ooh,
and it's so freaking
good. That sounds
good.
We have like deep fried dough in Serbia. I'm half Serbian
originally. Oh, love it, yeah.
And we eat it with, yeah, like any kind of syrup or butter as well.
Yeah.
But I never had it with watermelon and syrup. That's
sounds Well, yeah, the watermelon is obviously
on,
like,
side,
on
yeah.
the side.
But
yeah.
like the contrast.
Yeah.
The yeah.
It's perfect because it's all sticky and sweet and then you have
then,
the watery,
like,
fresh.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So summertime.
Epic.
Roll kukin. Look it up. It's magnifique.
You'll get a random text and be like, hey, it's Christine. What's up? Like,
are you making
remember?
Any roll kukin? I do try every summer to have a little like potluck where everyone brings their ethnic background
nice.
Food just so I have the opportunity to
make
roll
it perfect.
Cooking.
I will gladly attend it.
Perfect. I love it. And then you can bring some Serbian treats.
Absolutely.
It'll be amazing. But yeah, so basically, like my upbringing was pretty average, like middle class family in a suburb. Like I always had like a good relationship with my parents. I always knew that they loved me, like, all that good stuff, like, went to school, but was low grade to high grade depressed the whole time, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really funny to look back and even see the roots of it, like, in childhood.
Yes.
Yeah, to just start to see where, like, oh, those times, like, I always kind of felt like an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember constantly thinking, like literally my siblings and my family and my cousins who I would play with, and I would just be like waiting for them to turn around and be like, oh, Andrea, we don't we're not going to pretend to like you anymore, and we're not going to play with you anymore, and on your own now. And, like, there was no reason for me to think that.
Yeah.
Except that something in my brain just expected it.
Yeah.
And that was this route, right? You can look back and be like, well, that's not a far step from hating yourself.
No.
Right?
Yeah. And, like, it's so funny because this is a thing that we talked a lot about in previous episodes about mental health in general. Like, the hardest part is also just noticing that this is not normal.
Totally.
Because it's your normal.
Yes.
And so you're just like, this is how people are. And you're like, no.
Like, and I had this mind-boggling revelation in my 20s with, like, a friend who I met as an adult. And she made a reference to herself as a teenager. Don't even remember what she was talking about. But it made it obvious that she liked herself when she was a teenager.
Yeah.
And I actually stopped her. I was like, wait. You didn't hate yourself? I thought everyone hated themselves when they were teenagers.
Yeah, but to be fair, I've had that conversation with people because I'm one of those weirdos who didn't hate myself either.
What? And how? So what was that like?
It was super weird because everyone was going through... I had, like, some, like, bad teenage years around, like, maybe 14, 15.
Sure.
But then, like, 16, 17, 18, like, all of high school, I was just like, why are people so, like, weird?
Right.
Like, I could see the existentialism around me. And just, right. I was like, what's up with everyone?
Yeah.
Like, this is weird. I felt the outsider on the other side of the spectrum. I was just like, I don't hate my body. Like,
yeah.
I'm, what? Am I supposed to?
Like, you're like, I'm actually kind of okay with who I am.
I'm sort of
alright
with this.
I don't know how to deal with this. Yeah, it's so funny. And so there is... probably most, well, all teenagers obviously struggle at some point
with something,
with those feelings. But I remember what my friend said is she was basically like, yeah, of course I had insecurities, but then one day I just kind of thought about it and realized that, like, I am who I am and that's not gonna change, and so I'm just gonna like myself. And so,
and you were like, what?
yeah exactly. Sorry.
No.
How? I had to spend, like, years reprogramming my brain as an adult.
Is that why you did psychology at UBC?
Probably subliminally. Actually, before I went to university, I was at my part-time job at Rona.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about how I wanted to study psychology and theater in university. And this man who worked at the store was like, oh yeah, the only people who study psychology are people who are trying to figure out what's wrong with them.
And you were like, yes.
Well, see, at the time I was just like, fuck you, man.
That's like a totally legit thing to study.
I know. I was just like, it's like the study of human behavior. It's so interesting. Which is true.
Also.
But also.
But both are true.
Yes. He was probably right.
And see, I went to one psychology class because I also went to UBC.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is not for me. Right. I walked out of there. I'm like, nope. I can't.
Backing away.
Too many, like, too much actual biology. Like,
right.
Give me philosophy.
I feel
much more at ease here. There is no concreteness about any of this. It's all in space. I love it.
Oh, yeah. See, and I do really love the, like,
the
scientific
side.
Study of human behavior and why we do what we do. And then, the theater, it's such a complimentary then to have the theater where you're, like, artistically exploring it.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So that was pretty fun. But I don't remember how we got into this now. I've lost my train of thought.
The train of thought was, so you had that conversation with your friend, I'm assuming during university?
Oh, no, that was actually well after university.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, it was like at my last job years, only probably about 5 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
So
you finished UBC and then what happened?
So I finished UBC, still hated myself.
Double major. I would hate myself also. That's like a lot of work.
It's
and
true.
And Rona probably.
It was. Well, at that, I was very keen to finish within 4 years.
Oh my God.
And to live in Vancouver and not go back to Abbotsford. So
you're insane. What's
so
wrong
I just
you?
Took summer courses.
Yeah.
So that I was like, oh, mom and dad, like, I have to stay in Vancouver. I'm taking a summer course. And then I got to stay in Vancouver.
Oh, my God.
And
nice. Good job.
And finished my degree in 4 years. So it worked out.
I had one major and I did 4.5. So
it was definitely a little keener. So it was towards the end of university that I kind of had been hiding my depression, like, my whole entire life. Mm-hmm. And as you may be able to tell, I have a very upbeat personality.
Yes.
And so people were very ready to accept
that, like, you were
that
happy.
I was happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if I ever seemed down, people would be like, oh, how are you doing today? I would just go, oh, I'm tired. And they would believe me.
Yeah.
People don't want to know that you're depressed. And no. They want to believe whatever you tell them is true. So
yeah.
They believe me. But yeah, I actually had, it was so silly. It was like, my mom was realized that she couldn't give me a ride to a thing that she was going to. Mm-hmm. I was back in Abbotsford for like a visit, and it was like this little tiny straw that broke the camel's back, and I just started like weeping.
Aww.
And like my poor mom, my sister was in the back seat. She was just like, what is happening?
What happened? Yeah.
And my mom, who's fantastic and like was like, okay, clearly there's something else going on here, because yeah. You wouldn't react like this
just this to minor inconvenience.
Not get a ride somewhere. And so finally it kind of all came pouring out, how I was like not happy and like all this stuff. And and so she helped me to start seeing a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And then so that was, I think, going into my fourth year at university, I had started seeing a counselor, and I saw probably like I think I saw three different counselors, as well as like a pastor, and yeah, and just like read a bunch of books. And then of course I had been studying psychology.
Yeah.
So pulled this stuff together. And so I did find a decent number of tools through that that helped to a degree with the depression.
Mm-hmm.
But I still had that core belief, that like deep down hating myself belief.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until after university that I kind of had this little mini revelation that I was able to capitalize on.
Mm-hmm.
And use that to learn to not hate myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so did you always write about those things like as you were going through them, or did you decide later that you were going to write about your little steps?
I wrote about them later. So it
yeah.
was like, I kind of went through the whole thing. I went through, after the counseling and then the little revelation moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then doing all the work, a lot of like sort of cognitive behavioral practices, gratitude practices, like figuring out things that made me happy, and just like all these different things to kind of help myself see myself in this new way.
Yeah.
And so I did that, and it magically worked.
Like, yeah.
It still kind of blows my mind sometimes that it worked, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then after that, I had like the most soul-crushing breakup of my life. Completely shattered me.
Oh.
And then so when I was trying to put myself back
together,
that's when I started writing the stuff. And it
yeah.
was sort of, yeah, it sort of like helped me, like by writing and remembering the things I had done in the past that brought me healing, it like helped me
heal the current. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so funny, because I always had my biggest bursts of writing right after breakups as well.
Yeah.
It's like the whole book is like, how many times can you break up?
Right.
Like, with the same person.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those. I was great. Hey,
oh, good times.
We got books out of it.
Exactly.
So, thank you.
You know what?
Assholes.
Us and Taylor Swift, basically, right?
Basically. I mean, mm-hmm. we are three very tall women, so
yes.
we share things in common. Cool. And so what, this is like the dumbest sort of typical question everyone's going to ask you, and you're going to get so sick of answering it. But, and I, for me, okay, so this is a question that comes from, like, a place where I didn't expect this question, and I should have.
Right.
People are like, what do you hope that the book accomplishes? And I was just kind of sitting there going, like, well, I hope to accomplish the book.
Right.
So I've accomplished it. I don't know what you want from me. Now go
like,
read it.
Like, the book was written.
It's a book. It exists. Ta-da. Accomplished. But I totally understand that, having written a guy that's so deeply personal, and you know, that was kind of what was happening for me as well
mm-hmm.
with the book, is like this process of healing. I think there is something that we hope to accomplish with sharing our stories.
Oh, for sure.
And yours in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Did you wish that you had that kind of resource back then? Did you just not find anything like this in your process of research?
Yeah, that's kind of part of the thing. Like, I realized at first, like I said, I was just writing it basically to help myself
mm-hmm.
heal. And then at some point I kind of thought like, oh, maybe other people have felt this way too.
And like,
ooh, big revelation, right? But like, oh, like maybe it would help someone else to see how this works. Because yeah, I found in all the other resources I used that, you know, either it was a book, especially with the books, it was either from an expert, like a psychologist or a therapist. And so they would have great insights, but they weren't coming from personal experience.
Yeah.
Right? And so you would be like, okay, I can kind of glean some stuff, but they don't necessarily explain what it looks like. Yeah. How does it work? What did the person actually do? Or I would read personal experiences, but then they were more as memoirs, which are great and beautiful and useful in a different way because they give inspiration and you can see a person's journey, but not still, like, necessarily,
what do I do?
Yeah. Like, what are the, and I'm just like, practical. I just want to know, like, give me a step-by-step list.
Yeah.
Like, do this, do that.
That I can check off and then feel better.
Exactly. And so basically, yeah, that's what I did. I was like, well, I could have used a very practical, like, here's this thing, here's that thing. If that doesn't work for you, try this one.
Yeah. I think that's, like, the most interesting part about, you know, conversations that are around mental health. Like, we had an episode, the very first episode of this year, 40, which was on depression and sex.
Oh, okay.
And how the two can be in, like, in opposition, but don't have to. And Joellen, my guest, gave, like, everyone a practical list of, like, try these games, try reading these things and talking about those things. And I was just like, I love this because I am not that person who's practical.
Right.
I am more like, here are all of my questions.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Here's a whole bunch of thoughts and a whole jumble of things and get, like, what you can out
of
it. For
sure. Like, I'm sorry about the further existential crises, but this is what happens.
But those are like it's just different things useful in different ways.
Yeah, but
right?
That's why I really like always coming across books that have that reflex because sometimes you don't know you need it.
Sure.
Until you're like presented with it, which I'm sure is sort of what you realized when you were writing it.
Yeah, basically. And I also had, so there's a local playwright named Lucia Frangioni. She's amazing. And the theater that I used to work at, we produced her plays quite a bit. So I was often working with her. And she had this quote. It was like right when I was in one of those phases, as you probably know from writing, where you like hate the thing and you're like, this is stupid. No one's ever going to want to read this. Why am I doing this? Blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And,
so much.
And I read this quote from her and I'm going to poorly I should have memorized it.
We'll put it in the description correctly.
It's something like, if you feel an urge to write something, that means someone needs to hear it. And if you don't write it, there will be a gaping void where your courage could have been.
Oh.
Right?
That's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful.
Such a good way to call you a coward.
Like, yeah, exactly. I was just like, well, I guess I should keep writing this.
Yeah.
And I guess at some point I'll have to tell people about it.
Yes. How did you tell people about it?
Oh my goodness. Very awkwardly. Actually, what I did is I mostly didn't tell anyone about it until I announced that I was publishing the book. And then I just put it up on Facebook and friends
You're
were like...
You're one of those people, aren't
I am,
you?
I am.
You're one of those like, poof, this just happened. Never mind that I've been struggling for like 7 years trying to write it. I was like the opposite. I was like, still writing chapter 2, guys, in case anyone's worried. I'm over here facing this person. They're like, shut up. We don't care about your book anymore.
Right. Everyone's like, we've heard about the book. And like, for me, it wasn't so much that I didn't want to show the struggle, right? But it's like telling people that
it's
I wrote a book was so, and I felt I had tons of imposter syndrome because I felt like you're supposed to be an expert, right?
Yeah.
I was writing a self-help book. Like, who am I to write a self-help book?
Hey, I'm a 28-year-old with a memoir at the time. I'm
right?
29 now. So I feel you in the imposter syndrome. I'm like, excuse me, what?
Yeah.
And plus, like, anyway, this is a whole other conversation.
Right.
Imposter syndrome is real, and do not let it defeat you.
It is so real, and it affects everyone.
Everyone.
And just, this is a very good sidebar, because I did a mentorship recently with, first of all, we think it only affects women. It doesn't affect men, too.
Yeah.
Is this male, like, super successful mentor guy in my field, in the theater field. And I was talking about how I was like, you know, I think the main thing that's holding me back is imposter syndrome. I got to figure this out, and I got to get past it. And he just went, oh no, that never goes away. And I was like, oh. So that means you just have to live with it.
You do, yeah. And I was talking about this on one of the other episodes. I was at the Cannes Film Festival.
Uh-huh.
And I saw...
Fancy.
Yeah, I worked there. Not that fancy. and I saw Charlize Theron shaking. Because she didn't feel like she belonged in this room with all these idols.
Oh,
and so
my
I was
goodness.
Just like, we all... Right? Like, we all have it.
Like, Charlize Theron. What?
Yes.
Is nervous.
Dude. Like, shaking. She, like, hid. And I was just like, what?
Yeah. Okay.
What?
Well,
yeah,
there you
yeah.
go.
So
yeah.
definitely do not, yeah. Mm-hmm. You just kind of have to, like, find tools to cope with it.
Yeah. Find some tools. Or get, like, yeah, with talking about the book,
think
I just realized,
Charlize.
Like, yeah, channel your inner Charlize Theron. It's good. It helped to, like, practice kind of how it sounds. It's so dorky, but basically I practiced, like, okay, when people ask you what your book's about, what are you gonna say? Because it's terrifying to talk about.
Yeah.
So I'd just be like, this is what I will say, and then you do it more and more and you get used to it, and then finally you're like, I mean, slightly less terrified to talk
still
about
terrified.
It
yeah but yeah. but now you have a rehearsed speech.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm actually, like, really interested to see, like, if there's anything that surprised you that came out of, like, the writing part, like,
oh.
that you, because I guess, like, the journey itself, like, people can just buy the book so they can find out what you say.
Sure.
But for me, like, self-love is such a big, self-love versus self-loathing is such a big theme. Like, there, you could go anywhere with it, you know? Like, there's issues on either end, but I find that sometimes when you delve into, like you were saying, like, the written word and you face it and you remember it, there are things that just, like, pop up.
Mm-hmm.
Did that happen? Did something, like, kind of just go... Oh, that was there. I didn't realize that was there.
I think... I can't think of a particular example of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely, like... Because I wrote it over, I think, about 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
So definitely there was stuff, like, when I would go back to,
and
like,
read.
Edit a chapter or read it. Yeah, and be like, oh, that's what I thought? Or, like,
yeah.
Oh. Or just see, actually be like, oh, I could still see, like... the little undercurrent of self-loathing in some of the writing, even though at
you
the time
were already healing.
I was healing, like, I was feeling better in the sense that it was an improvement, but it was like, I was like, oh yeah, like,
you
still
have so much further to go.
So much to go. And that's part of what, well, it's hard with a title like Feeling Better, because I know some people read that and think it's like better, done, check mark.
No.
But no, it's like better, like incrementally better. Like,
yeah.
And that was a good thing to have that. Like, every time I looked back and be like, oh yeah, I thought I was feeling better then, but I'm feeling even
better
now.
But it's better and better. It's not
and
feeling
can...
good. Tick, like, you know?
Exactly. So definitely, like, that was a thing to be like, oh yeah. It was such a good tangible reminder of how incremental it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's, like, something we all take for granted, because we are so sort of socialized into thinking about ticking boxes and fitting in boxes.
Yes.
And, you know, checking out resume things and going by these, like, to-do lists, when in fact it's just, like, more like a circle. Like,
right.
Just trying to, like, oh shit, I'm here again. Oh, I know how to go back up, and then it's going back down again. And then eventually, you know, it's going up anyway. So, like, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough.
Yeah, and so much of it is just being like, okay, I've been here before. I know what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to, like, talk myself through it or what to do or whatever. But yeah, it's like, I would say it's like a slow upward or downward spiral, depending on where you're at. But yeah, it's like you kind of do the same terrain over and over again, and it changes a little bit, but it's all familiar.
Yeah, it's especially when you get into the heartbreak stuff, like,
oh boy,
I know. Oh my god, it's so funny. So I work in the film industry with a lot of, like, super young people.
Sure.
Because I'm a, like, bottom of the chain kind of, and so they're all 20, 21, and everything is the worst thing in the world, you know. And I remember so distinctly much later in my life feeling that way.
Yeah.
And it's really funny because you're just like, oh, you'll be fine. They're
right.
Like, no, I won't. I'm like, you will. Trust me.
You
like, this is the worst
will.
Thing in the world. I'm like, you'll be okay.
Yeah. Actually, you're right. You're in a good space. You'll be okay.
I mean, yeah, it's totally. Pretty shitty right now, but it's going to get better. And then it's going to get worse. And then it's going to get better.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you'll know how to get better.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. Oh, man. And the heartbreak one is like, because it's such a tangible thing that everyone experiences, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, and you think, like, every time you have a new heartbreak, you're like, I thought it would feel this way. And it's still, I remember one where it was like, this guy, I knew from the start that the relationship wasn't going to go anywhere, right?
Oh, I love those.
It's one of those classics.
I might ignore all these red flags.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, okay, it's not going to go anywhere, but like, he's cute, he's fun, whatever. We like dated for like 6 months. And of course, turns out you can still fall in love with someone.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you know that it's not going anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so big shocker there.
Lessons.
And then after that one ended, and it was just like, I knew this is how it was going to end, and I still feel like trash.
I still did it to myself.
Yeah, it turns
That's
out.
That's a tough one. Mm-hmm. I think it's very, it's like something we don't really talk about, because we talk about big love a lot and like big things, and they're like tiny little insignificant, quote unquote, like breaks are really hard too.
Totally.
And I think that's like really helpful to have a small like guideline of what are the little steps you can take, because they're different for everybody.
Totally.
But I think the practice of just like checking with yourself and what things work for you and what doesn't is just basically that's like how we should do things,
right? Yeah, like actually
it
just
sounds so evident.
Take it in.
And then you're just like, wait, what am I saying? This is so simple.
But it's like not. It's so simple and obvious, and yet we don't do it. So
yeah, why do you think that is?
Oh, yeah, good question. Actually, so here's something from psychology. Unfortunately, I cannot cite any of the sources because I just like to read research and I don't remember where any of it comes from.
That's all good.
But there's actually a decent amount of research to support the fact that, like, we naturally will just go into whatever is the lowest effort. Not the things that make us happiest, but the lowest effort. So it's like you come home at the end of the day and you might know that, oh, if I like sat down and jammed on the piano or drew a picture or whatever.
Read
a book. I will feel really happy while I do that and after I do it. But guess what we do instead?
Netflix.
We turn on Netflix because it's the easiest. There's no resistance at all to that. And that's just how our brains operate. And like, you have to force yourself to do anything that's not like the easiest thing.
In front of a screen.
Yeah. So that's our problem. That's why we don't do these things. I mean, I'm sure there's other factors. Like, of course, also, for example, if you hate yourself, well, then you're not going to be inclined to do something to take care of yourself because you think you're a piece of trash. And why on earth would you take care of a piece of trash?
That is like so much time. How do you get out of that? Like, honestly, I don't.
Well, that's what's in the book.
You're so good at teasing. That you can now buy. Link in the description.
Right. But honestly, like, it takes effort. So it was a thing, like, I had to, and anyone else who wants to do this, like, you do have to decide that it's worth the work to do it. Because that's probably why I didn't really get that healing for so long, because, I don't know, it just wasn't worth the effort, I guess, at those times. Or the other thing is that it feels stupid and it feels like it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're sitting there telling yourself that I'm really a worthwhile person and people like me, and you're like, this is stupid. This is not going to help me. This isn't going to change anything.
This is how we all look at self-help.
Like,
from a distance. You
know? It's like gratitude practices, especially because they get talked about so much now, they sound stupid.
Yeah.
It sounds really dumb to be like, write down 3 things you're grateful for at the end of the day, and that will help you like be a happier person.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my goodness, that's so dumb. But it's actually...
But it does. I know, it's just like, it's so funny how we like think we're so much better.
I know.
Than we are. Like, at certain things, like, we're so much wiser. And it's like, no, dude, it's like, that's just practice that's still around, I'm pretty sure, for a reason.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, you beat the system? What? Like, who are you?
I know. Like, our brains, our brains are all the same. They're just firing neurons, like, going, and you just have to, like, train them to fire in a different direction.
Yeah, and, like, acknowledge that that's what your brain does in the first place.
Yes, exactly. And that, like, as much as we like to believe we're better than that, we are all still, and we still have our lizard brain that's, like, telling us all sorts of things. And you've got to work, like, with it when you're changing things, not pretend it's not there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's really funny because, like, we had an episode with Jen Larson about body image,
mm-hmm.
which for me, like, relates a lot to, like,
self-talk stuff. Yes.
And I, right around the time where I was recording that episode and talking to her, I was seeing this guy who I find is, like, extremely attractive, and mm-hmm. I was just like the epitome of man, and
the epitome of,
like,
man.
Physically, yeah. Like, I was just like, yes, all of that. More.
I love it.
And he thought I was the epitome of woman.
Like, amazing!
Physically, and kept telling me that physically. Like, telling me. And I was just like, I had to literally sit down and write it down to be like, this is so retarded that you need this guy to tell you that to feel better about the 5 kilos you put on.
Right.
That you... I have the least body issues of all of my friends. Like, I'm the most comfortable, and yet I still have them. Yeah. And it still takes someone else...
Right.
Seeing that for me to feel better. So, like, untrain that. Like, even that little last bit. Just acknowledge that it's there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it felt great. I encourage everyone to encourage other people. If you find them attractive, tell them so.
Of course, but tell people the good things about them.
Yeah, but also tell yourself the good things about them, about yourself.
Totally.
Because, I was just like, what?
Yeah. But that is one of the things that I actually had to do at the beginning, was use the things other people were saying to mm-hmm. me. Because as much as people say, and it's true, that you don't want to put your stock in, like, your body image or your view of yourself or whatever in other people's opinion of you, of course not. That's going to be toxic. But if you hate yourself,
you need to start somewhere.
You need to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And you're not going to find those things on your own. So you kind of, like, I started with, like, actually, instead of, like, a standard gratitude journal, I would write down, like,
nice
the things
people said.
Basically nice things other people said to me, or of things that they had done that would indicate that they
liked
me.
You.
Right?
Yeah.
So it'd be like, oh, I ran into, like, Jane on the street and she looked like she was happy to see me. Like, as basic as that.
But,
or, like, Frank said I did a good job on, like, X project at work or whatever.
Yeah.
And just, like, these little things just to tick them up and be like, okay, well, you know, people don't usually lie about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, we're not that special. People aren't all conspiring to lie to us about, like, these things. So if this guy is telling you that you're the epitome of womanhood, then, like...
Take it.
You are the epitomy of womanhood.
In someone's eyes, that is the truth.
And, like, take it, write it down. And writing things down?
Huge one.
It's huge. I would try sometimes. I'd be like, no, I'm not going to write things down tonight. I'm just going to think about them. And it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And I think because I used to think when I was in university that I would have to write it down with my hand, like handwrite it. And then, obviously, I wrote a 300-page book that would be, like, how the fuck would you write that by hand?
All by hand?
Like, 7 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I started realizing that the fact wasn't the actual writing down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's related to my memory. Like, I'm a person that remembers things when I write them down. So if I was, like, learning a language or whatever, yes, I would have to handwrite it.
Right.
But the process is the ability to read, to go again and read it.
For sure, yeah.
Because you can't rethink your thoughts. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you're thinking, it's like, it kind of, like, slips away.
Yeah, it's this ephemeral thing. You get distracted.
Yeah, even if you record it, if you don't like writing, like, there's other tools.
Yeah.
But, like, a way to access it again is, like, a really powerful
moment
of, like, self awareness.
And I think I like that you hit on even recording yourself, because it's like, that forces you to actually concentrate on what you're doing and think about it, whether you're writing it down or saying it out loud. Because if you just think it in your head, like I said, like halfway through the thought, your brain is already somewhere else.
Yeah.
And you've lost track of the things and you don't know what it is. But even if you just, like, okay, I'm going to just list out loud
these like nice things that people said to me today, then you're like, okay, I have to go through them all. I have to say them out loud or write them each down.
Yeah.
It makes a difference.
It totally does. And mm-hmm. Yeah, highly recommend.
Yeah.
What else was I going to ask you? So you mentioned the book goes through some of the cognitive behavioral stuff
yeah.
that you learned, some of the gratitude practices,
mm-hmm.
a little bit on spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
What are the other sections of your book?
Yeah, so we've already touched on it a little bit, mm-hmm. but there's a section about actually doing things that make you happy.
Yeah.
Make you
not sitting in front of Netflix?
Not sitting in front of Netflix. I mean, I suppose there might be, there's probably one person out there who's like, no, that genuinely feeds my soul. And then I'm like, okay, fine.
You can have that. Netflix. Yes. Yes.
But like, and in each chapter, so for example, in that chapter, it's like, I feel like every chapter is something that you say and you're like, oh, that sounds so obvious. But then when, I think for most of us in general, but especially when you hate yourself, to actually even know and be like, well, what does make me feel good? Like, how
yeah.
do I figure out what activities like feed my soul and make me feel alive mm-hmm. and give me that little spark inside me? So I kind of talk about like different ways you can sort of figure that out and find the things. And there's like variety, again, taken from a whole host of different books and sources where I'm like, okay, this person tried this thing and
yeah.
that kind of works, or do, you know, and find the things and then find ways then to manufacture your life so that you actually do
can.
Them.
Yeah.
yeah. Because that's the other thing. Like, once you figure out the thing, like, if you're like, well, I love photography, but then you tell yourself that
you
well,
can't
it's
afford
only,
the camera.
Yeah. Or, you can't afford yeah. the camera. It's only worth it if I go out for a whole day and take photos or whatever. It's like, well,
yeah.
no, then you're never going to do it.
No.
But like, if you can't afford a camera, well, guess what? We all have phones now.
Yeah, and do it in the morning on your way to
yeah.
school or work
like,
or the bus or whatever.
Like, set up a thing for yourself where you're like, every day I'm going to take one beautiful picture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Done.
We all can. Yeah.
It's like this thing we talked about. I did yoga teacher training as well
yeah.
because I'm a young woman in Vancouver. I just actually
not.
A young white woman in Vancouver because
yeah,
it's mostly
totally.
Us who are doing the yoga teacher
training. I have never
trainings.
Gone to yoga.
Oh,
I
good
am
for you.
I've gone to Pilates.
Yeah.
So I've sort of cracked. But I have still never in my life gone to a yoga class, and I'm inching closer and closer to doing it.
Well,
but
I will say, like most things, it's super trendy for a reason because it's a great practice, but it's also not for everyone.
That's
true. But one of the things we talked about in my teacher training was this idea of just like showing up to the mat, and because
yeah.
you're supposed to do a daily practice when you're a yoga person.
Yeah.
And so our teacher would talk about like different ways to help yourself do that. And one was to say, like, if you're like, oh, I really don't have time, he's like, then just flip out your yoga mat, stand on it, maybe do like one little like mountain pose and a forward bend, and then you can be like, okay, cool, I did my yoga for the day, and roll up your mat and put it away.
Yeah.
And even that tiny
just the
little
fact
thing
that you did it, yeah.
counts as a practice. And then of course chances are that once you show up, you're actually gonna do more because
yeah.
you're there,
because you're already there,
you broke
yeah.
down that barrier
yeah. Yeah.
and now it's easy.
Yeah,
again, to that thing of like just doing what's easiest.
Yeah.
The hardest part is being like, it's not hard, but mentally it's
yeah.
hard to be like, okay, I'm going
to
get up,
yeah.
grab my yoga mat, roll it out,
yeah.
do the thing.
I know. It was really funny. I realized this summer too, because I was just like, I had a lot of time and I was like, I really wish, it was like a sunny day, and I was like, I really wish I could just go for a walk and get some ice cream. And it was just like, why don't I just get up?
Yeah.
It's literally a 10-minute walk
like,
to the beach.
I wish I
just get,
could.
Like, what is this stupid, like, I'm like, just get off your
yeah.
ass. Like, it's not because you're alone that you can't go get ice cream. Or
right?
it's not because, like, I don't know what the reason you thought was that you couldn't go get ice cream. What is this thought?
Totally. I've had, like, it's funny. I've totally done the exact same thing.
Like, this
been
would
like,
be the perfect day for.
It's gorgeous out. I would love to just sit in a park and read my book outside. And then I stay inside.
Yeah. You're like, oh, it's sunny out. I should go outside.
Yeah.
And the sun sets and you're like, I didn't leave my couch.
Exactly.
Like, such, oh.
And so, yeah, and it's just those little things. And so, like, it helps, especially if it's something you want to do regularly, just find ways to, like, fit even the tiniest bit in
mm-hmm.
and, like, go. Or, like, when I was trying to start writing more.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I need to find a way to schedule this in. So I was like, okay, well, on Thursdays, after at 7 o'clock, I had a thing that started every Thursday. So I was like, I get off work at 5, the thing starts at 7. From 5:30 to 6:30, I can sit in a coffee shop and write in between, because I'm not going home during that time anyways. I would just like wander around otherwise, or stay at work for an extra hour, and like, who wants that? So then I was like, perfect, it like fits in, I can get it done. And then once you start doing it, if it's something you really love, then you're loving it so much, you want to do it more. And like, now I write every single day.
Yeah.
But it's because I started with that tiny hour fit in between things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's easier too, like, not only just to like keep doing it, but also it's easier when you fail. When you said small, like, if you just stood on your mat, it's fine. If you wrote one sentence because your heart wasn't in it, it's also fine because it's 1 hour of sitting with it. It's not like you planned this whole day and now you spend the whole day failing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's staring at a white page.
One little step and you showed up. Like, the thing most of the time is, like, you just show up to whatever the thing is and great, you've done it. You showed up.
And how do you feel now? We're coming closer to the end of the episode, but how do you feel now that, you know, just the book being a thing and having written it and having it as a thing, how do you feel like it changes your personal life? Like, do you have different conversations with people?
Well, I mean, I guess right now I certainly am, because I'm like talking about the book a lot. Mm-hmm. So talking, I mean, I've always, not always, since I started being open about my depression, because obviously I was hiding it before, but since I started being open about it, I'm pretty cool to just talk to people about it. But obviously it's just like a much more prominent conversation right now in my life. So that's something that's definitely changed. Like, everywhere I turn, and learning how it's one of those things. Oh, nothing challenges all your self-esteem practices like all of a sudden publishing your own book.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, like, you know, people coming up to me and being so kind and so generous and like, oh my goodness, I'm so excited. And like, I bought 3 copies and I'm going to give them away. And like, and telling me how they, you know, all these compliments about things. And I'm just sitting there like shrinking inside, because it feels like I'm like, oh, but I just like did a thing and now I'm doing like, I feel like I don't quite deserve all that accolade. And then of course I'll talk myself around and be like, no, Andrea, you wrote a book. That's a good
who the
thing.
Hell writes a book nowadays. I know.
But so that's interesting. And sometimes I've been like, am I a fraud?
Did totally I write are. This we book? All are. Like, yes. That's totally fine. We all are. That we're, the minute we all realize this, the more that, and I think this is what's interesting about the thing you said about experts, is like, it's totally a definition that's changed. Like, what the fuck is an expert anymore? We don't have people who spend 20 years doing the same thing. I mean, except for some PhDs.
Sure. Sorry, guys.
For discrediting your whole existence.
But like, we've erased PhDs.
No, but like, what I mean is like, everyone dabbles nowadays.
That's
like
true.
Way more than when we used to before. And so the whole definition of just like being an expert, especially when it comes to like human condition, is bullshit. Like, everyone has the same amount of credibility in terms of being a human.
Yeah. Like, no, this is true. Humans. We've all been humans. And a friend of mine I was kind of talking about this with her, and she was like, you are the expert in your experience.
Yeah.
She's like, this is literally your life. Of course you're the authority on it. I guess you're right.
but it's all of that self-evidence stuff, which I find is very interesting when you start to pay attention to, you know, and I hate it because it sounds so cliche, like hashtag healing, hashtag woke, hashtag like blah, 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 self-care, self-love, self-work.
I know. I put really all those hashtags on my Instagram posts.
I know. But it's just is a practice. It's just something that, like, I find when I notice that people aren't doing their work, I'm like, out of my life. I can't. I'm doing so much work on myself. This is so difficult.
Oh, my
I cannot
goodness.
Help you get there. Bye.
Okay, I saw this, like, comic the other day that was like, me dating at like 19 versus me dating at 29.
Yeah.
And the 19 one was just like, ooh, are you cute? Are you fun? Like, what are you studying in school? And then the 29 was like, so have you faced all your inner demons and how are you dealing with the your baggage from the past?
And how much are you going to project that shit onto me?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, yes, that's true.
It's so true, though. But you start at, like, I feel like the whole world needs, like, a fuckload of self-care right now and, like, self-awareness.
Because the world is feels like it's spiraling out of control.
But it's always been out of control. We just have words for it now.
I know.
We have tools to do better, so we should.
And we have all the tools to communicate about it more, so it just like feels so much bigger. And I gotta say, the one thing that I find interesting right now and a little disheartening is how self-care has become such a commoditized thing. Like people talk about self-care and they're like, oh yeah,
buy
face masks and shoes and like treat
bath
yourself
bombs.
And I'm like, yeah, of course, go treat yourself if you want to treat yourself, but that's still like a shortcut.
Yes.
Like it's not
yes.
Again, it's not
do
doing the
work
things.
And then get the ice cream. Like, right? Don't, you know?
Like, or by all means, have the ice cream while you're doing the work.
Yeah.
Like, if
yeah.
it helps you feel better,
but
great.
Do that consciously. Like, don't just purchase to feel something.
Yeah. Like, I get... So, apparently comics on the internet are my big thing
Your
right
thing.
Now. Because there's another one. Is like, a picture of, like, a mother and a child. And it's basically, like... saying, like, self-care equals self-parenting. And it's the kid being like, I just want candy. And the mom being like, no, you have to brush your teeth and you have to go to school. And you have to, like... And it's like, yeah, self-care isn't just indulging every desire you
it's
have.
It's taking care of yourself.
It's parenting yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, doing something that's good for you, even if you don't
feel like it. Totally. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Send me the cartoon.
I will send you the cartoon.
Perfect. So, you guys, important dates. So, the book has been out for 4 days.
Yes.
So, go buy it. All the links will be in the description. And you're having a launch party.
Yeah.
At Massey Books.
That's right.
On February 21st.
Yes.
At 7 p.m.
That is all correct.
Yay. What can people expect from this party?
Well, it'll... So, the standard book launch, you know, I'll do a little reading, probably some kind of Q&A, and... but I'm trying to work out having maybe a friend... play some music or do something.
Ooh.
So we'll have a little something extra fun, and there'll be a bar and refreshments and
amazing,
you know. And people have told me I have to sign books, so I guess
yes,
I'll
you
be
do.
Signing
you
books
do. Oh my god, that's gonna be so fun. I love doing that.
I have to like pre-think of some clever things to write in them
because... that never works.
Yeah,
trust
no?
me.
Okay.
I never works. I'm always like, ah, with love. No,
oh, us too.
But or I end up writing a whole paragraph because I'm like, oh, you have a nice face, I want to tell you things, and then I'm like, what? And there's like people behind you.
I want to write You Have a Nice Face.
Yeah, yeah.
In people's books now.
There you go. You're welcome.
Done. Yes, thank you. But yes, please, I would love to see people at the launch. It'll be fun.
Yay. Okay, anything else that they need to know here, say?
I know. I think all the links and stuff will be in the
awesome.
Show notes.
Yes.
So you can track everything down and,
yes.
and I don't know, learn. If you don't want to read my book, then find something else to help yourself like yourself.
Because yes.
it really does make life a lot better.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? It's like a sunny day.
Yeah, exactly.
Versus a very hot, humid, cloudy one.
Exactly.
Or something.
Yeah.
Just have a more eloquent metaphor there instead of this. Okay, guys, well, thank you so much for listening again. You can like, subscribe, applaud, whatever you do on the apps that you have. And we will speak to you next Friday.